House Transportation Committee is to order. With me on the Senate side, me, Chair Senator Egan, and we have other senators that are getting out of caucus and are on the way to the meeting. Madam Chair of House Transportation, will you introduce your members?
Okay, I have Representative Feige, Representative Gaddis, and myself, Representative Wilson.
And introducing staff, Becky Rooney will be staff to House Transportation, Alita Bus, staff to Senate Transportation, Secretary Ann Krickelberg, and Conference Operator Sam Greeley. Thank you, folks, for helping us out. And go ahead.
And for the record, Representative Isaacson has joined us.
Thank you, Representative. And the only item on the agenda today is an overview of the Port of Anchorage. And we're honored to have the Mayor of Anchorage here, Mayor Dan Sullivan. Mayor Sullivan, welcome. And
thank you.
Introduce your staff, and we're ready for the presentation.
Thank you very much, Senator. Thank you, Co-Chair. With me today at the table is our Chief Financial Officer, Lucinda Mahoney. Also have in the audience my Government Affairs Director, Shalon Harrington. And the Chair of the Anchorage Assembly, Ernie Hall, is also in attendance today. So we've got a full team, and any of your tricky questions we'll be able to handle them, I think, with this group here. So the pleased to have the opportunity today to talk about something that has consumed a great deal of my time over the last 4.5 years, and that is the Port of Anchorage, or as we like to refer to it, the Port of Alaska. You all have a packet in front of you, and obviously we've got a PowerPoint as well, and it's interesting that the PowerPoint's always behind you guys, so I'm not sure if it's...
we have it right here.
You got it down low. Oh, very cool. Excellent. It's new technology. I never get to sit in those seats. So this is, of course, just the general picture of Anchorage with the port up on the horizon. Just a little bit of history. The port has been in operation for over 50 years now with continuous service. As we all know, in 1964, the Great Alaska Earthquake did severe damage to the ports of Seward, ports of Valdez, and other coastal communities. The port survived all that with very little impact, and from that point on has been the central operating port for the entire state of Alaska. And I think really one of the reasons is that in the past it was able to survive a significant seismic event, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Just some facts about the port, and one of the reasons it's important to point this out, and it really refers back to why we do call this the Port of Alaska. Incredible amount of goods pass through the port. They estimate 90% of the merchandise goods for 80% of Alaska's populated areas comes through the Port of Anchorage. This serves over 200 towns, villages, and rural communities across Alaska. It is the major point of entry for containerized cargo. Over 240,000 containers move through the port annually, and since 2000, about 4 million tons of goods and materials pass through every year as well. So the port, in addition to just being a key piece of infrastructure, clearly is an economic engine for the state of Alaska. We estimate just closing in on $1 billion in overall economic impact, $50 million in aggregate payroll for all the port stakeholders. Amazing. When the ships are in, and we'll show these a little bit later, when the big barges are in, over 3,600 vehicles move through the port in one given day, taking all those goods from the ships and taking them off to all corners of Alaska. Nearly 100 million pounds of those goods that pass through the port are distributed as bypass mail. So in addition to direct surface transportation, taking these goods off to the communities on the road system or the rail system, it's very key to the bypass mail system as well. This gives you a close-up view of the port and talk about some of the capacity there, some of the facilities. About 220 acres of land that is both developed and available to be developed, two petroleum berths, three cargo berths, a dry barge berth, which is way up at the far corner or far left corner of the picture. We've got a floating dock for small vessels, and a key element of the port is the three petroleum pipelines, which go to J-Bear, the Ted Stevens International Airport, and one in from the Tesoro Refinery on the Kenai Peninsula. And kind of a hidden fact is just how important the port is to fuel distribution in addition to the commercial goods that we talked about earlier. And then again, just an overview. This gives you an idea of the exact boundaries of the port, which includes up in the left corner to the small boat launch, which one of the little known gems of Anchorage is that we've actually got a fairly active small boat commercial fishery that launches from the small boat launch area. And that area where the boat launch is, and just to the right, you can see in your package, Ship Creek winding through, is the area that we have just undertaken a major development plan, planning for the future of that area. It's one of the things that's very unique there, and very unique about Anchorage, is that we are a city on the water, but we have no waterfront. And so the goal is to develop that area up in the north, or up in the south end, but up in the corner of your picture, into a new livable community right on the water.
Excuse me for just a half a second, Mayor.
Yes, you bet.
We're joined by Senator Faircloth and Representative Lynn.
Welcome.
Continue.
The port stakeholders, we've got some major corporations that do their business at the port. They're essential to the operations of the port and to the goods and services that we talked about earlier. Horizon Tote, ABI, Tesoro, Crowley, you can read the whole list. One that, of course, is in the news most recently is Flint Hills. Former Mayor Isaacson is very familiar with the importance of Flint Hills to his community, and it's also very important to, both to the railroad and to the port of Anchorage as well in terms of the tonnage numbers that we handle.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mayor Sullivan. So just on those two points, what's the impact going to be? I suppose there might be some good if Flint Hills is going to become a terminal. You'll get some traffic in, but have you been able to track the impact to the Port of Anchorage with the reduction?
Well, we can probably get back to you with a specific figure, but one thing that kind of balances that out is we do actually have some new fuel capacity coming in with Delta Western, so one's kind of offsetting the other. So we don't think we'll see a negative impact, but more of a neutral impact with the new customers coming in. Thanks.
Thank you.
And also, Mayor, apologize again. We're joined by Senator Dyson as well, Vice Chair.
Apologize for being late, Mr. Chairman.
Hi, Senator.
Continue, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. The two very distinct types of vessels come into the Port of Anchorage, which supply, again, the majority of the goods with Horizon and Tote. Horizon uses cranes to unload the containers, loads them directly onto trucks and their chassis, and they truck off to wherever they go. Tote uses roll-on, roll-off vehicles where the trucks actually drive right onto the ship, hook up to the containers, and drive off that way. So one of the challenges with the port is you do have to have two separate capacities for two very different models of how to unload and ship freight, one using massive cranes, one using trucks with direct hookup. And so as we design the port for the future, we have to make sure that we take into account that we have two different systems that we need to account for. This just to emphasize, again, you've probably seen this map before, but it is really probably the most telling map that shows the strategic importance of the port in terms of getting goods to every corner of the state. Other than deep in the Aleutian chain and further down the panhandle, virtually every community in Alaska relies on the Port of Anchorage for their goods. And you can see the bigger dots are kind of the regional hubs, the smaller dots are the communities that are then served from those hubs, oftentimes by bypass mail. The one that's interesting that most people never get to see is just how important, and we talked about it earlier, about fuel distribution. And this kind of shows where all the different fuel types, whether it's jet fuel, avgas, unleaded gas, diesel, where it's distributed in the state and where the primary need is for that particular type of fuel. So it shows that again, that port and its distribution of fuel is extremely important to run the engines of the economy of Alaska. And within that concept, 100% of the jet fuel used at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, so they are hugely reliant on the Port of Anchorage for their fuel needs. About 65% of the fuel at the Ted Stevens International Airport, and then, again, most folks don't realize, but we're a hub for, 1.5 million gallons of fuel to Western Alaska as well. So we also, amazingly enough, with all of our resource, we import quite a bit of gasoline, jet fuel, propane, and again imported through the port and then distributed. And then one of the challenges, of course, is this port operates in very extreme conditions. Second largest tides in North America, as you're all familiar with, icy conditions, oftentimes a pretty swift current in front of the port moving chunks of ice around within those massive tide changes. So the operations daily at the port is just a tremendous logistical feat every single day to operate this port. And it's open every day and never closes. So the team down there, including the stakeholders, do a great job.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. Looks to me like that boat's high and dry on the mud, right?
I think it's on the ice.
I think it's floating.
It's floating.
Okay. Oh, that's just dirty ice.
Dirty ice, yeah.
Right.
I think in your package, the picture might be a little bit clearer than the,
right.
than the PowerPoint.
It's,
no, we don't want ships stranded in the mud in the port. So, and again, one of the other things that, again, a lot of folks aren't aware of, but this is designated by the Department of Defense as a strategic seaport. There are only 19 in the nation that have that designation. And it's not just been a designated port, it's been an active strategic port. Over 30 deployments since 2005, over 18,000 pieces of military cargo have passed through the port just in the last 7 years alone. And one of the things that we've done over the last few years as part of the port expansion project is create a direct haul road from J-Bear to the port of Anchorage. So we've got a direct connection, does not have to intersect with any of the other road systems or railroad tracks that you find to the south of the port. So it's a very strategic transportation link that we have with our military. The port continues to seek new business. It's open for business. I mentioned to Representative Isaacson about the Delta Western Tank Farm, which is starts this year in construction, and we'll have a lot of added capacity for storing fuel. Tote's got a new just-in-time project on the North Extension area. We've, as you can see in those two pictures, the port was able to handle the wind farm turbines and the bases, which, you know, until you see these things up close, you don't realize how massive they are. These are huge pieces of equipment, and they all had to come across our port and do so efficiently and of course, without any damage to the port facilities. The picture on the lower left is the new generators that Matanuska Electric Association is installing at their new generation plant outside of a Clutton area. So again, these were massive pieces of equipment that took very, very unique systems, tractor trailers with, I can't remember how many wheels on it, but unlike anything I'd ever seen transported in Alaska before. So the port is very important for these big energy projects. We anticipate going forward, there's going to be a lot more energy projects, whether it's a dam, a pipeline, and so the port has got to be ready and capable to handle these sort of massive lifts.
Mr. Mayor, just
yes.
Welcome Senator Bishop to the committee as well.
Hey, Senator. And Senator, this is Lucinda Mahoney, my chief financial officer, and for the others that may not know Lucinda. We just completed a new business plan. One of the things that we wanted to do is before we started forward on the next phase of the port expansion project, we wanted to make sure that that expansion met the business needs of the port. And, of course, the business needs are defined in great part by the customers that we have, those folks that use the port every day. So the business plan is just about ready to be released. It's in draft form now, but we certainly will continue to use that business plan as our kind of our guiding model going forward. And it includes doing some of the things we're doing now, but also some additional things like barge services to rural Alaska and petroleum products expanded to include possibly LNG and CNG. So we'll be expanding capability in the fuel area as well. All right, let's talk a little bit about the elephant in the room, the port expansion project that when we first came into office 4.5 years ago, it was discovered literally within days. The rumors we'd heard during my transition period were confirmed by folks actually on the ground at the port that the construction project to expand the port was not going well. There was major damage in the installation of port facilities, and even the design itself was called into question about whether it was suitable for this area. So we have spent literally countless days working on what is the path forward. And one of the reasons that it's so critical for us to keep moving down that path as partners with the state is that the seismic stability of the port is starting to become into severe question. You can see these pilings in your packet and on the screen. This is the result of a high tidal area with swift currents moving a lot of silt and salt across things that corrode. And so we've been band-aiding these piles for, there's about 1,400 plus piles at the port. We band-aid as many as we can every year. You can see them putting the sheathing around them in the right-hand picture. 25 repaired last year, 2012, 46 in 13. We'll be doing some more, 100 more in 2014 this year. and it's millions and millions of dollars, and it's just a Band-Aid approach to it. We just can't keep proceeding that way. It's not efficient, and by the time you get to the 1,400th pile, the ones that you started repairing are corroded again. So, again, we're very concerned. If there was a major seismic event similar to 1964, back when the port was new, it withstood just fine, but now pretty much all the experts have concerns. And the people that use the port have said that even though there's other ports or there's trucks up the Alcan and stuff, any major damage to the port would be catastrophic. Now, during the construction, and we'll talk a little bit more about kind of how why things went wrong and where they went wrong, but the port intermodal expansion project actually did accomplish some pretty good work. There was about $300 million spent, and out of that, there was some good things done. We've got rail extensions, a new floating dock, the gravel haul road I talked about. We created about 65 acres total of new land, which is very important for port expansion and for staging large projects. And did a lot of work with the roadways and how they intersect, utility relocations, drainage improvements. So a lot of good work was done, but unfortunately, a lot of bad work was done as well. So with the work that was done, it was a sheet pile design, which some of you may be familiar with. You install sheets up the front, you connect them, and then you fill it in with dirt to make your land mass. And again, as we came into office, people were questioning whether that design was actually suitable for the seismic conditions at the port. So the Corps of Engineers commissioned C.H. Tuam Hill to look at the design. C.H. Tuam Hill concluded the design was not suitable. The original engineers, Proctorovich, Nottingham, and Drage, P&D, contested that. They said, no, this design has worked all over Alaska and around the world. It was the construction that went bad. So I decided I need to have a third-party review of this because you've got two engineers essentially saying they're right. So totally independent review by a company, Steinford, Gumpert, and Hager, SGH they call themselves, world-renowned forensic engineering team. They look at situations like this and try and figure out who's right and what's your best path forward. And they concluded that the original design was not suitable for the seismic conditions at the port, that if there was a major seismic event, there was the possibility of the port failure. So with that, we know that we're not going to go forward with the same design that started the port project. We're going to go back to a more traditional pile-type system, replace, the 1,400 piles, a new design, and I'll walk you through how some of that's going to look. Here's how it looks right now today. If you can see on the left-hand part of the picture, this is the work that was done creating the new land mass and the sheet pile design front that you see. And then to the right, the existing port with virtually no improvements done whatsoever. Of the stuff on the left, a lot of that is what's going to have to be replaced. We'll probably be scaling back the frontage back a number of feet, maybe as much as 30 feet back. But the good thing is at the far left of your picture there is the new dry barge dock, and all the engineers have agreed that that is functional and safe and does not have the same risk as the sheet pile areas do. So we commissioned part of the study that the Corps of Engineers commissioned with C.H. Tuam Hill was to make recommendations on an alternative design. And the first step of that is on the north end to the left of your picture is constructing a new dock. Okay. And then TOTE would then move to that new dock while we started work on the original dock area. You can see the horizon stays at the original dock area. TOTE has moved off to the left, off to the north. I'll advance a picture too. Then Horizon moves to the south, to the north, and you can see the work that's done pushing the port facility out an additional 10 feet, so it's out to 45-foot depth. And when that's constructed, then Horizon moves to that dock, and we can work on the part to the left, which we do. Now both facilities are now moved out to the 45-foot depth area, and ultimately TOTE can move back to their original berthing area. Now, this is what was proposed, but I have asked them to modify this proposal, and the reason is what you see on the left there, that Northport new facility, the brand new one, is almost a $300 million project, $280 million just to build that particular piece, and it does nothing with that amount of money to improve the existing facilities. So I've asked them to scale it down and what you'll see is a situation more like this, where instead of one of the shippers moving to the north to the new facility, they will move up and down the face of the port as the different phases are built. And this saves us, again, $280 million approximately, and allows us, I think, to move forward with a project that is scalable and, I think, affordable, because I think we all know going forward, money's going to be a challenge on this project.
Madam Chair, for a question?
Yes, you're going to need to explain, when you say they're going to move up and down the face.
Yeah.
Using top, bottom, left, right.
Yes.
Of the picture.
Yeah, what would happen is, as you see this picture right now, the ship on the right-hand side would move to the right, because that's a dock as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then we work on that part, and then the towed ship would move to the right, and where they're berthed right now, that gets repaired. So
gotcha.
We just do a little shuffling along the front. Now, there's a bit of a challenge with that in that as the ships move to the right, that's also where our cement ships come in, and so we're going to have to work out the logistics of how we unload our cement. It's amazing how much cement comes in through this port, and they're there for about a month. Unlike Toad or Horizon, who unload in one day and head back down Cook Inlet, the cement ship stays there for quite a bit of time, so we want to make sure we don't impact that. But we think we can do that. That's logistically not so challenging.
Okay.
So we'll work that part out.
Representative Wilson, you have a follow-up?
No, Fred.
Okay, Representative Isaacson, then Senator Dyson.
Thank you. So, Mr. Mayor, on this, on the Sullivan option, it's going back to the previous pages, like, say, on slide 22 or something, it looks like that it's identical to the 15% concept option 5.1 step 2, except that it takes off the one dock to the north.
Yeah, you don't build that dock on the left-hand side of the picture, and instead you shuffle up and down the front of the port.
So there is no real difference in those, except perhaps a strengthened dock option that remains?
Yeah, what will happen is you not only have a brand new dock with new piles and new capacity, but you're moving out to the 45-foot depth level, and that's very important because that's the depth level for a strategic port that's required by the Department of Defense. Some of their deep draft vessels will need to call on the port, and we have to make sure we've got that capability. Plus, going forward, just as a business model, you know, the new ships that are being built are bigger with deeper drafts, and so we want to make sure that, you know, down the road we don't want to miss an opportunity for other shipping companies to come in.
Okay, thank you.
Paul?
No, that's good.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Thank you. I was going to ask you about the draft there. When you said dry barge, did that mean that the barges go on aground on low water?
They do.
Yeah.
Yep, they actually beach themselves right on the...
Yeah. So for many years, Corps of Engineers has been dredging out further out, and I used to think that it was about $25 million a year that they were spending or something like that.
Yep.
And I've heard that that might go away. So comment on how fast you expect it will silt in there and how much dredging you got to do on the front and what the Corps is doing and what you think the future of their help, please.
Yeah, that's a great question, and can't speak for the Corps, of course, but the dredging at the Port of Anchorage is the number one expenditure of the Corps of Engineers in Alaska, and it is in the $20-plus million range. And they've made the commitment that, knowing the strategic importance of the port, not only economically to Alaska, but to the Department of Defense as well, that it's going to continue to be a priority. The other good thing is that by moving out to the 45-foot depth, we're going to actually solve some of the siltation problem.
Yep.
You get out in a little bit better current flow, and you don't have that settling in as you get into shallower ground.
Just to follow up, if I may, if you have some kind of historical data on how the silt is building up there, you know, out there and so on, and I think it's changing a bit.
It is.
If you have any information on it, I personally would enjoy that.
Yeah.
Don't go far out of your way.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things, and you bring up a good point about siltation in general, the face of the dock is one thing, but what we're encountering now is, if you went to the bottom of that picture and went a little further, that's the channel that the ships come in on, and then they do a turn coming into the dock. There's siltation problems now out there in the channel. It's starting to narrow, Nobody's quite sure what's causing it. Some people speculate, and I don't want to get into port wars, but that the Port McKenzie facility, because it sticks out, changes the siltation pattern of Cook Inlet. People have told me that the silt in Cook Inlet is so dynamic, you can put a finger in there and change the how the silt flows. But not to pick on Representative Gaddis's area at all.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, it's really an aside, but as you know, there's been commercial gold strikes on every creek that runs into Cook Inlet. And my mining buddies tell me if they'd let them run dredging spoils over a riffle back bed, they would be glad to dredge the whole thing for free and thought they could make a lot of money off gold mining out there.
Interesting.
I suspect that would be a tough operation to permit.
Well, Mayor, more questions.
Sure.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator from Eagle River took most of my thunder, but the original sheet pile design essentially had a smooth face all the way along the front of the right. The front of the port facility, and that did help greatly with the basically made it almost a self-scouring
yes.
port, which would greatly reduce. The dredging costs. Given that this is now your wharf face is actually, I don't know if it is somewhat out of the current flow, but are there things you can do with the design to essentially preserve calm water behind the wharf face, which would lead to getting silted in around your pilings, which isn't necessarily bad. But to try to keep the water velocity highest out by the wharf face, and hence keep your dredging costs down.
Yeah, it's a good question, and the engineers have told me that two things with the design you see right now will help with the siltation problem. One is at the left-hand part of the picture, which is the north end, by scaling that back to where it's almost not quite, but almost parallel with the port front, you're creating. Not the exact same as you would have had with the sheet pile design, but you are creating, again, a good flow there, and again, by coming out to 45-foot depth. Ultimately, I've been told that the area behind the face could at some point be filled in, creating more, you know, storage, more capacity, and that would solve the problem once and for all for siltation behind it.
Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor Sullivan, does the Port of Anchorage operate as an enterprise agency in the
yes.
city? And so under that operation model, do you have a retained earnings account then for the port?
I'll let our CFO answer all financial questions.
Yes, we do.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
For the record, my name is Lucinda Mahoney, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I might. So we have a retained earnings account. I'm wondering if you can tell me when the last time it is that we looked at port fees and docking fees. I know when I served on the Anchorage Assembly, we went through that process. Have we done it again?
We look at it actually every year at the point in time that we do our budget and we look at our revenues. And I know that the mayor has worked with TOTE and Horizon, and we've looked at increasing our rates. It is an option that we're looking at for 2014 because, as you can clearly recognize, we have cash flow constraints in regard to our ability to issue debt and pay for additional construction.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify then, that it's been a decade since those fees have been raised?
I don't know the length of time, but we can certainly find that out and get back with you.
Mr. Chairman, I've been here for 8 years. So. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been here for 8 years, so it's been at least that long. And I had that when I was on the Anchorage Assembly that we took it up, and I didn't think it was the last year, but it could have been. So thank you.
I think there might have been in some areas, not an overall rate, but, you know, you have different products. I mean, the cement rates, I think, have been adjusted, but we'll get you back a good answer there. One other thing about I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, all questions done? Thank you. One other thing about this design that is preferable, particularly to the stakeholders, is that it was TOTE, the ship on the left, that would have had to move further to the left, to the north, and that moves them even further away from their base operations. And in their business, time is money, and so every minute that it takes a truck to roll on, roll off longer than what it does today over the course of thousands and thousands of trips adds up to real money to consumers. So with this design, I think the stakeholders, particularly TOTE, find this a preferable design. So one of the things that was interesting about the whole port project before we came on board was that it was managed by the federal government. And, you know, had it been the Corps of Engineers, which is great experience all over the world building ports, we probably wouldn't have had the problems we had. But the Maritime Administration had really never managed a project of this sort before. They're a subset of the Department of Transportation. So because of the problems with the port, the Inspector General's office within the Department of Transportation did an audit of MARAD's work, and it was a scathing audit. You can see the audit report findings on the right. It's very rare for an Inspector General within the same department to issue something as terse as this was, but essentially it said MARAD failed in every single aspect of their project management duties. They didn't conduct planning. They didn't follow federal contracting requirements. They didn't establish a good risk management program. There was no quality control, quality assurance. There was nobody on the ground directly managing the project. No benchmarks, no timelines. It was just about everything you can do wrong in project management they did. And one of their claims is, well, we delegated that, but as it turns out, the contract arrangement does not allow delegation. You're responsible. So it's not like where I was asked to mow the lawn and I made Bobby do it and he did a bad job. And so when Dad gets mad at me, I say, well, no, it's Bobby's fault. No, and so you can't delegate certain responsibilities. And so going forward, the City of Anchorage Municipality is responsible for this project. We're taking over all management duties, which means the buck stops at my office, which is probably where it should have been before we came on board. We just completed a request for proposals for a new project management team that will work directly for the municipality. CH2M Hill was selected as the winning respondent. Six of the seven scorers had them number one. The seventh one had them number two. They were by far and away the best proposer. So the final step in that process is for the assembly to give approval. There is some concern about CH2M Hill, and I can get to that. Well, I'll come to that later. I can just speak to it now. CH2M Hill purchased VECO some years ago. VECO had done some work on the port project in the early days, basically verifying that the design would be suitable. So when CH2M Hill bought VECO, they bought any liabilities that go with VECO. So I know some assembly members have concern about that. Our lawyers, our purchasing people have all investigated this top to bottom. There's no legal prohibition against the CH2M Hill bidding or winning the bid, and it satisfied all rules and requirements. Just as a cautionary measure, the Assembly asked us to send it to the Bidding Review Board. They unanimously came back with the recommendation that the bid process was done properly and that CH2M Hill was not only qualified to bid, but certainly was the proper winning respondent. So we're hoping the Assembly will allow us to move forward with that contract. If not, there were, I think, five total respondents, and you know, all of them qualified firms in their own right. So if somehow this doesn't work out in this direction, we'll find another direction. Let's talk money. Money, money, money. This is kind of the tail of the tape and what's been contributed by the state. And on my other slide, I'll show you the federal contribution and by the port as well. I think some folks don't realize that the port has actually contributed over $80 million to this project to date. So total, the port intermodal expansion project has received $439 million. $302 million of that has been transferred to MARAD. We've got some miscellaneous expenditures. MARAD paid contractors essentially with that. And to date, we have about $130 million unobligated. And part of that, if you look at the chart below, the main reason for the money remaining is SB 160 in 2012, which put $48.5 million into the project, and the 2012 general obligation bond, which added another $50 million in the Big Port Energy Road Bond in 2012. So we have enough money to move forward with design. We have enough money to move forward with probably even first phases of construction. but we're probably not quite there in what we'll need. This next slide, and to total these up, you just you see where it says total. The left-hand column is the state contribution. The right-hand one is the port contribution, and then the bottom 300 plus is the total of those. Federal funding, we've been. I'll stop there. Yeah,
Representative Isaacson. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Lynn.
Thank you very much for your presentation. We talked about MIRAD and mainly what they did not do. Were there any liability on the part of MIRAD for basically failing what they were supposed to be doing? Were those contractual matters that they didn't fulfill? And they didn't fulfill the part of the contract they should have fulfilled. Why are they getting all this money back?
Well, they're not getting money back. This is what they've already spent. When it says funds transferred to MIRAD, that's essentially what they spent to date on the project.
But they spent, if I may, through the chair, they spent this for doing improper things.
Yes, and in about two slides, I'm going to show you the answer to that question.
Thank you.
You bet. The federal contributions to date, pretty significant federal support, Department of Defense, Federal Highways, FTA, totaling about almost $140 million from the federal side. So we had a good combination, a good partnership between the port, the state, and the federal government. Our challenge going forward, and we'll talk a little bit about this, is that the likelihood of that level of federal funding in the future is very slim. We're gonna work it, but we'll see what we can do. So going forward, we'll get our new project management team on board.
Mr. Mayor, yep. Representative Isaacson has
sure.
a question.
Thanks, Mayor. So are you going to have any penalties from any of the federal funds because of work that didn't finish a particular project, or are they going to allow you to apply it to the new alternative project?
Yeah, to date we've not heard any concern about penalties. I mean, the money was spent. Work was done, whether, you know, I don't think they take into the criteria that one of their own agencies didn't manage the work well and penalize us for it. So,
through the chair, I was thinking perhaps more of the fact that since you are changing the plan, they might penalize. I know in some transportation funds that occurs, and so you have not received that notification.
No,
I won't highlight it.
Can we stop the tape right there?
Yeah.
But it's a good point, because you're right. On some projects, if the scope of the project changes, there is some consideration of payback or whatever. We'd like to consider this just still the same project with new design parameters. And but again, so far, no word that's a challenge at all.
Good. Thank you.
Continue.
So anyway, clearly a new management team on board reporting directly to us. We'll get new environmental assessments done, new permitting, and hopefully start construction. And so when we look at financing going forward, we're going to leave no stone unturned. At the federal level, there are still Tiger grants. You've got port security grants. You've got infrastructure improvements. You've got MAP 21 that provides money for transportation funding, which includes ports, strategic ports, homeland securities. All of these have some monies, but in grand total, if you were successful for any one of these or all of these grants, you'd be lucky to get $30 or $40 million total, I think, and they're very competitive. The state funding, clearly we're going to continue to work with our partners at the state, whether it's grants or another GO bond for the voters to approve. And we also got an opportunity, we have an opportunity through AMATS funding to put some money into the port. There was a letter that was written from Congressman Young, co-signed by Senators Murkowski and Begich, that clearly indicated that even though earmarks went away, it was the intention that when funding came in through AMATS, that part of that money was supposed to be for port construction. So at the AMATS level, if the policy committee agrees, we can actually shift some funding around and get some money through the AMATS process. And then, of course, locally, just like we've done with the $80 million that we've contributed before, we do have the ability to incur a little bit more debt, some port equity, but again, not as robust as it might have been some years ago. So, and then, of course, P3 partnerships have been discussed. The folks at ADA came to visit with us, and they talked about the port project as potentially a candidate for a public-private partnership. Our challenge is just in those sort of relationships, you need a good revenue stream so that after 30, 40, 50 years, you know, they've been paid back plus a profit. And so back to Senator Faircloth's question about rate increases, that probably would engender some sort of a study of our rates and how to make sure that a P3 actually generated the kind of revenue necessary.
Mr. Mayor, questions. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mayor, not living in your neck of the woods and having the biggest port, you know, in my neck of the woods on the Tanana, maybe the Chena, I don't know.
Is that an aqua port?
We call it the port.
Port of Indiana.
Port of North Pole. So we've heard about how this has had a cost overrun and such. So with the view of the amount of money that has been spent to date, what's the amount of future financing that you're looking for, and how much of this are – I know it sounds like you're looking at figuring out what color that money is going to be, so I know you can't define it, but what – how much do you think it's going to take?
Yeah. The CH2M Hill study did put some preliminary numbers on the various designs, and that's why I had a figure for that north part, which we're not going to do. I think right now with the $130 million that we have in hand, probably $250 to $300 million more gives us the funds to complete the project.
Thank you.
Yep. And, of course, got to wait on final design and true estimation, but those are the numbers. That's the range I've been given so far. TIFIA loans, TIFIA credits available out there. We won't go into a great deal about this, but there are both loan guarantees and lines of credit through the TIFIA process, and you can get you can actually get credit for the amount of work you've already done as part of your calculation and what you qualify for. And again, we won't spend a lot of time about that, but it's just another opportunity. 2014, I think they funded $1 billion for TIFIA, and again, many projects looking for that money. So, but again, we're going to look at every avenue. So, okay, Representative Lynn, the question about our legal obstacles. We have already filed a suit against the designer and some of the contractors. ICRC Integrated Concepts and Research Corporation was the general contractor. P&D, of course, was the designers. CH2M Hill, which was, of course, Vico. Then did some of the verification work on the design and seismic work. So they're already, we're already in legal action with them. Future litigation, as you can see in the middle, says United States Department of Transportation, Maritime Administration. We are not going to go quietly into that good night when it comes to legal options with MARAD. $300 million was spent and we did not get a delivered project. So it's, I think, only natural that we're going to include them.
Where are we in the process? When do you expect resolution on this litigation?
Well, litigation with MARAD has not been filed, so that's a ways away. We're a year into the lawsuits with the contractors and designers. Briefs have been filed, oral arguments. I can get back to you from our legal team about just what they see as a timeline for getting this to some kind of resolution, but off the top of my head, I don't want to throw a date out there.
Representative Lynn.
And what was the oversight here in the state and locally? Did anybody know this was happening until it was too late?
Well, there was actually a whole, not to get into the legal arguments too much, there was actually a whole series of communications from contractors and P&D engineers over the course of, I think, 2008, 2009, 2010, with grave concerns about what was going on in the construction aspect.
Thank you.
Yep.
Representative Lynn, follow up?
No, I just said, well, I could follow up, but I choose not to.
Okay.
Very good. And as you can see, you can go onto the website that's listed there and find the full complaint that's been filed so far. So that concludes the formal presentation. This is the visit of the USS Anchorage in May. We had, one of our fine naval vessels named after Anchorage, and they came, had a tremendous celebration. The day that they were here, it was May 4th, it snowed nonstop for about 5 hours during the whole commissioning ceremony, then stopped when the ceremony was over. And so the poor sailors and Marines that had to stand out there, you know, at attention for the whole ceremony while politicians and admirals gave speeches was they earned their keep that day. And the aircraft up in the upper right-hand corner is the Osprey. I got to ride on that, took off here, landed on the ship outside of Homer, and then got to cruise in with the ship overnight into the port. It was a tremendous experience, and it really reinforces the incredible qualifications and expertise of our military men and women. They just, had it down to a T. So.
And knowing you, you kept your remarks brief.
I actually kept my remarks very brief.
Okay.
I shouldn't say this, but it was snowing so much that people would stand up for, you know, the formal ceremonies and anthems and stuff. And as they were standing, it snowed so hard that their seats got all wet. You'd hear a collective groan as they sat back down into a cold puddle. So that was the only negative of the whole day.
Representative Isaacs and then Representative Flynn.
I can attest he's absolutely saying right. And the politicians would say, we're going to be brief. And then we'd watch. Now, I am a brief speaker myself, so I appreciate this.
You learned that during the days as mayor.
You'd have inches of snow on your chair by the time you sat down.
Representative Lynn.
Is there any plans for future ceremonies and the project to have a giant awning out there next time this happens?
Well, you know, it's funny because you should be ready.
Recovering from that.
You should be ready for any contingency, but I don't think anybody thought in the first week of May we'd have snow like that, but it's Alaska, and should have been ready. So, would that answer any questions, Mr. Chairman?
For the questions of the mayor, or Ms. Mahoney, none from the committee? I can't believe how quiet you are. Yeah. Mayor, thank you very much for taking the time. Ms. Mahoney, thank you for coming to Juneau, and Assemblymember Hall, it's good to see you here in the audience, and Mayor, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And that concludes the joint Senate House Transportation Committee.